Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Postal workers stage protests in seven cities over staff shortages. Today marks the beginning of National Safety Stand-Down Week. On the show today, we check in with the Iowa AFL-CIO and the general president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. Welcome to the Monday, May 1st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Al Womble is going to be our first guest on the show today. He is the political director for the Iowa AFL-CIO. He's a lifelong resident of Iowa, was a steward for LIUNA Local 353, and also the political captain for that local. Al worked as a pipeliner, later hired by the Michaels Corporation as a safety coordinator. He earned over 52 professional safety certificates while working for that corporation. And right now, he's a member of Laborers International 177. Al also is the chair of the Iowa Democratic Black Caucus, former chair of the Political Action Committee of the Des Moines branch of the NAACP, and he is also chair of the West Des Moines Democrats. He's also served as the state director of the No Justice, No Peace Federal Political Action Committee and served on the Mayor's Pledge Task Force in West Des Moines that reviewed the recruiting, training, and a number of the policies for the local police department. He also has been the Democratic chair of Iowa's 3rd Congressional District and a board member of the Asian and Latino Coalition. Very, very involved in politics, obviously. IowaAFLCIO.org is their website. And we're going to talk primarily about what they're doing in the legislature there. And right now, it's not law, but if things are going the way they are going, children in Iowa will be allowed to work longer hours, including in jobs that are currently prohibited, like serving alcohol, like working in construction. We're talking serious changes here, and they are not alone. Right now, there is a coordinated effort going on in America, and according to the nonpartisan Economic Policy Institute, legislatures in at least 10 states have set out to weaken federal child labor laws. In the first 3 months of this year, lawmakers in Iowa, and that's what we're going to talk about today, along with Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, and South Dakota, introduced bills to weaken the regulations that protect children in the workplace. And in March, the governor in Arkansas, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, signed a law repealing restrictions for workers younger than 16. Those in favor of the new policies argue that fewer restrictions on child labor will protect parents' rights. That's the argument. It may seem kind of weird, but that's what they're saying. This is all coming down, and we talked about this on the show last week. There's an organization based in Florida. It's a right-wing think tank called the Foundation for Government Accountability. And this organization is working to dismantle the federal government to get rid of business regulations, not just dealing with child labor, but across the board. And you're seeing this. There are a number of groups that are trying to take apart the federal government and put everything back to the states. And they're successful, especially when they have a supermajority like they have in Iowa. In the meantime, I just want to let you know that two senators, Cory Booker and Peter Welch, have introduced legislation. This happened last week to deter child labor in the meatpacking industry by barring offenders from federal contracts. Now, as a major purchaser of meat for school lunch programs, the USDA could act as a deterrent. The legislation aims to address a slew of recent stories uncovering dangerous labor practices in the industries, including a report from the company Packer Sanitation Services, which was found employing children in overnight shifts. The shifts left children with burns and other injuries. It's amazing. Just amazing. So lots to talk about with our first guest, Al Womble. Our second guest on the show today is Jimmy Williams, General President of the Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT.org. A little background on Jimmy. He began his career with the union back in 1998 as a glazier with District Council 21 in Philadelphia. He was appointed as the assistant to the general president in 2002, served as regional organizing coordinator for the Eastern Region, and then back in 2011, he was appointed to the position of organizing director. In 2014, Jimmy was elected as the general president at large during the IUPAT's 31st General Convention, then re-elected to that in 2019, and then in August of 2021, almost 2 years ago, he was elected on a unanimous vote as general president of the IUPAT Executive Board. Good guy. 160,000 active and retired men in the United States and Canada. Members work in the finishing trades as industrial and commercial painters, drywall finishers, wall covers, glazers, glass workers, floor covering installers, sign makers, display workers, also convention and show decorators, and other occupations. Yesterday, by the way, was International Painters Appreciation Day. And according to Jimmy, every day is Appreciation Day for painters. And he's right about that. And they point out that April 30th is in the middle of spring, and that's the beginning of ramping up for a very, very busy exterior painting season. And in the country right now, there's around 3 million painters. And painting, by the way, is not an easy profession. It's listed as either 9th or 10th as one of the most dangerous jobs in America. You think about this. Men and women risk their lives to revive a century home, a bridge, say, dedicated to a fallen vet, or a skyscraper going back to the 1930s. A professional, key word is professional, a professional paint job makes our world appear to be a little brighter with an artist's touch and hard-working spirit, a very hard-working spirit emanating from the focal points. This is all posted on the page for International Painters Appreciation Day, which was created by a guy from Cleveland, Ohio, William Jaworski, who is an elected officer of Local Union 707, District Council 6. In fact, they're one of our sponsors here on America's Workforce, IUPAT.org, the national website. Jimmy Williams joining us to button up the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Today marks the beginning of National Safety Stand Down to Prevent Falls in Construction Week. That's a mouthful, okay? Got some numbers here for you. Fatalities caused by falls from elevation continue to be the leading cause of death for construction employees, accounting for 378 of the 986 construction fatalities recorded. This goes back to 2021, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, points out those deaths were preventable. So the National Safety Stand Down raises fall hazard awareness across the country, all part of an effort to stop fall fatalities and injuries. Now, this is a voluntary event for employers to talk directly to employees about safety. So important, so important. Any workplace can hold a stand down by taking a break to focus on fall hazards and reinforcing the importance of fall prevention. Employers of companies not exposed to fall hazards can also use this opportunity to have a conversation with employees about the other job hazards they face, protective methods, and the company's safety policies and goals. It can also be an opportunity for employees to talk to management about fall and other job hazards they see. Anyone who wants to prevent hazards in the workplace can take part in the stand down. In past years, participants included commercial construction companies of all sizes, residential construction contractors, sub and independent contractors, highway construction companies, general industry employers, and U.S. military, other government participants, unions, employers' trade associations, employee interest organizations, and safety equipment manufacturers. OSHA, by the way, is partnering with a number of key groups to assist with this effort. That includes the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, better known as NIOSH, along with the National Occupational Research Agenda, or NORA. Now, if you want to share a story about how you are protecting yourself or your coworkers, here's what you do. In fact, I'll give you an email. It's OSHAstanddown@dol.gov. You can go there. OSHAstanddown@dol.gov. Or go on Twitter. Hashtag is StandDownForSafety. And that's the number 4. StandDownForSafety. You can find more at OSHA.gov as well. National Safety Stand Down to Prevent Falls in Construction. The postal workers invited consumers to join them on Friday in protests at 7 sites around the country against late, erratic, or missing mail and long lines at post offices, all, the union said, due to extreme staff shortages. Protest sites included the main D.C. post office in Washington. Let's see, also in Philadelphia, in Tampa, Florida, and Charlotte, North Carolina. Details were sent out to various outlets and news media to pick up and talk about the problem. The event spotlighted several staff shortages, especially of younger workers and postal clerks. Postal Worker President Mark Demenstein said, "Service problems are widespread, and no corner of the country has been spared." Now, this contradicts what Louis DeJoy is saying. He is the Postmaster General, who said service has improved 10,000% in the last 2 years. I don't know where he came up with that number. A 10,000% improvement. Now, Mark says DeJoy has changed service at the cost of workers and a toxic worst environment. The USPS is more than 80% unionized. Most workers are people of color, women, veterans, or a combination thereof. He points out that new hires at the Postal Service are often treated poorly. Many fail to receive proper training, resulting in high turnover. Combine this with the pressures of short staffing, high volume of mail and packages, abusive treatment by managers, it all adds up to a toxic work environment. The Inspector General reports, this is amazing, 58.9%, almost 59% of new hires last year quit, which is up from 38.5% the year before. The big problem, lack of respect from supervisors and too many hours on the job. The number of postal counter clerks dropped by 12.5% from 2006 to now. And as a result of all this, public confidence in the Postal Service is declining, according to the union. When lobbying for the Postal Reform Act several years ago, unions cited a Pew Research Center poll showing 91% public approval of the postal system. You know what it is now? 77%. This is all by design. That's my opinion. They want people to shame the Postal Service so some lawmakers get their way to privatize it. That's my take on it. I'm sure that view is shared by many in the union. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the Iowa Labor Federation.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at OFT-AFT.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment, good employment, great benefits, and wages. You can find more at ulagency.org, ulagency.org. Let's go to Iowa right now, and joining us on our live line is Al Womble. Al is the state political director for the Iowa AFL-CIO. Website is iowaaflcio.org. You heard me talking at the beginning of the show about what they're doing, along with other states, to get more children in the labor workforce. And this is a coordinated campaign, not just in Iowa, at least 10 states right now. And Al is in the middle of it all. It's not official yet. Al Womble, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. You were telling me off the air that you've been in the union for about 10 years, and but it didn't start off that way. Why don't you tell us how you found your way to organized labor? Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, well, I was working actually in retail management for quite a time, and then when I kind of lost my store there, I was looking around for a job, and one of my friends told me, "Hey, well, you're a big guy. Why don't you go into the building trades?" And at first, I thought, "Well, why do I want to do that? I got two different degrees from college." But then, I went and I looked at the Laborers 353 and signed on. Found out that I really liked the work, like the guys I work with. But more important, I received better pay and better benefits that I ever had in my life, and also then started building a pension, which has been extraordinarily important for myself and my family. And, it's allowed me opportunities that I've never had before, and I got to say, labor kind of saved my life by giving me a good job and giving me good benefits.
Change your life and it saved your life. I like that. So now it's 353, and LIUNA is the presenting sponsor of America's Workforce. In fact, we had Terry O'Sullivan, the outgoing general president, on the show last Thursday. Oh, what a great guy. What a great guy. But he's leaving in good hands, and he's going to hang around. He said he's going to be a president emeritus, and he's also on the board of ULICO. But a true fighter, almost 24 years there. Now, is 353 still around? You say you're now with the 177, is that right?
Yeah, 353 became 177. And a lot of the same guys are still there. The, you know, same guys when I came, you know, marching in there in the first day and said, hey, you know, I want to join the union. They're still around fighting the good fight. And, you know, I got to say they're some of my best friends and people that I can count on for, you know, advice or at least to go see a ball game. So all there that's great. Go.
Well, I'll tell you, you as political director, you got a tough bunch over there. You have we have the super majority of Republicans there. They're not very friendly to organized labor, are they, Al?
No. They keep taking their shots, you know, not only at labor, but just at a lot of other things that you know, we consider to be, you know, essential towards being able to live a good, happy, healthy life. You know, they're now wanting to adjust our child labor laws in ways that we find to be inappropriate, reckless, and, you know, more importantly, not really what I would need or what they're looking for. It seems to definitely just be more of a gift to large corporations out there rather than being a reflection of what Iowans are actually looking for.
So let's get into it here. And I've been following this. We've been reporting it here on America's Workforce. And boy, I tell you, anytime they try to do something like this that probably the general population isn't too happy about, they do it in the middle of the night. And I was reading, they passed the bill at 4:52 in the morning. 4:50, I guess they were arguing all night. Why don't you explain where we are with this legislation and what they want to do? Go ahead.
So right now, the bill has gone through the Senate. Today, it's going to be debated in the Iowa House, and their version is a little bit different from the Iowa Senate version. Essentially, some of the things that they're still trying to do is have kids as young as 16 years old still work in dangerous industries like roofing. They still want kids who are as young as 16 years old to be able to serve alcohol. And I remember one person saying, oh, we're not saying the kids can mix drinks since they're going to serve them. I'm like, yeah, that still puts them in a place where they can be facing inebriated adults at an age as early as 16. That's not a great thing. And so right now there are a lot of different organizations that are trying as hard as they can to show their displeasure with this bill and, you know, to ask them to take out the things about alcohol as well as the extended hours. You know, they now want kids to be able to work far later into the evening and then extend those hours during the summertime as well, an extra 2 hours. And, you know, we're definitely opposed to that, and especially being able to work in some of the dangerous industries like roofing, you know, has a fatality rate 10 times higher than most other normal building trades industry jobs. And we're very, very concerned about that. And in fact, you know, some of our guys have been going around the state taking pictures at different roofing locations and seeing that, you know, they already have, you know, young kids working there. So we want to, you know, stop that, you know, and make sure that those kids get off those jobs and not make it legal and suddenly have, you know, kids that are young in industries that are not only dangerous, but, you know, put them in harm's way.
The supporters of the bill said it would modernize Iowa's laws and teach children valuable skills through workforce training programs. Al, I take it you don't buy into that, do you?
No, not at all. I mean, if you really want to be concerned about making sure the kids, you know, develop good skills, then fully support and, you know, apprentice programs through their local unions. That's going to be one of the best ways you're going to get experienced people to help kids learn about jobs. Apprentice programs through their local unions is great. This is not exactly what they're talking about. I don't understand what sort of lifelong work skills a 16-year-old is going to learn by working in a bar. Now, granted, a lot of us worked when we were younger, but I wouldn't say that necessarily, you know, helped me understand the world of work much more than when I then graduated from college and went out to the work field itself. My other contention is that, you know, a lot of these kids who are going to be in these particular positions are going to be working not because they're looking for experience or because they're like, gee, let me understand the world of work. It's going to be the sons and daughters of people who are barely making ends meet right now. So they're going to be asking their children to go out and work so that they can come up with the fact that, you know, people aren't being paid a living wage. It's not necessarily, you know, they've talked about a labor crisis. It's not a labor crisis. It's a pay crisis. And people are going to be sending their kids out to work, not because they really want to, but because they have to in order to make ends meet, because they're not being paid a living wage to begin with. That's mm-hmm. where the problem lies.
Right.
You know, pay people a fair wage, and guess what? People will show up to work. You know, they figured, well, we can't do that. We're not going to pay people a living wage, so why don't we make sure we entice children to have take these jobs, whom we can then pay less.
Now, the age we're talking about in Iowa, they want to take it down to 16. I bring this up because there's some states, I think in Arkansas, they want to go below 16, as young as 14 in some of the states. In Iowa, is it at 16 right now they want it to go to?
Yeah, right now in Iowa, it's the age of 16, you know. And, you know, we still feel for some of the industries that they're wanting kids to be able to work in. And I know I've mentioned roofing before, but still, you know, that is a dangerous job.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, myself, I formerly come from pipelining. You know, I was a safety administrator at a pipeline company. And I can tell you, even at age 18, which we had people working on the pipeline, that still wasn't a really great idea because, you know, just when you talk about maturity and ability to pay attention and all those things that come with the world of work, and especially when you're working in dangerous building trades, you know, you're going to have better luck at getting people being able to do jobs safely and more efficiency or more efficiently the older they get.
Yeah.
Having kids as young as 16 and, you know, doing this work is definitely not going to guarantee safety.
You know, it's funny this comes up, too, because last Friday was Workers' Memorial Day. I'm sure you're familiar with that. And,
oh, yeah.
The AFL-CIO released their death on the job report. And they have it broken down, too, by industries. Agriculture, forestry, fishing, and hunting, number one, followed by transportation, warehousing, then mining. Construction, number four, and we're talking construction, especially you mentioned roofing. Mm-hmm. In construction, it's 9.4 fatalities per 100,000 workers, and then wholesale trade. I don't know if you saw this part, Al, but Black and Latino workers are more likely to die on the job. And they've been doing the numbers for a long time. It says it's the rate is the highest in more than a decade right now. But a lot of this, these are statistics they should be looking at in the state of Iowa right now. Let me ask you, what kind of pushback is happening here? I mean, is this getting a lot of media attention? Are parents coming to those meetings in the legislature to hear what's going on? Is that happening?
Well, that's a very interesting point. You know, there is a lot of pushback. There is a tremendous amount of media attention is being paid to this, not just nationally, but internationally. It was not very long ago that my good friend Charlie Wishman, the president of the Iowa Federation of Labor, was contacted by a French news agency on this very topic. And, you know, we had on the 25th of last month, a coalition of different nonpartisan organizations who all gathered together throughout the state of Iowa in order to speak up against this child labor law. Here in Des Moines, we had seven different organizations, nonpartisan organizations, come together for a day of action. And we had days of action in Keokuk, Iowa, Iowa City, Cedar Falls, Waterloo, Council Bluffs, a lot of places where, you know, we as the unions partnered with other individuals who said, you know what, this is ridiculous, and all spoke up together, our voices at one. And when we talk about the parents, you know, are the parents being involved? Well, unfortunately, we have a situation where the people whose children are going to be most deeply affected by this are working class Iowans. So those Iowans are going to be on the job working because they're in an hourly industry and can't necessarily take time off. And that's where other advocates need to step forward and say, you know, this is inappropriate and it's endangering our kids. You know, I would love to have more of the parents be down, be at the Capitol talking about this. But when you're at a job where if you don't show up, you don't get paid, you know, a lot of them don't have that luxury. And unfortunately, that's, the, you know, children who are going to be affected the most, the children of these parents, you know, who work these hourly jobs, who work these types of service jobs. But I am proud to say that, you know, here in the state of Iowa, you know, we had a lot of different organizations step up together. And I think it was, you know, not only an effective voice, but, you know, it showed a new brand of a coalition building that hopefully we're going to keep working together with as we move forward.
Well, you got job security for now. No doubt about that as state political director. Al Wommel joining us on our live line right now. He is a political director for the Iowa AFL-CIO, iowaafl-cio.org. We'll continue the conversation with Al later in the show. We're going to check in with the general president of the Painters and Allied Trades. Yesterday was Painters Appreciation Day. Jimmy Williams Jr. will be talking about that and more back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-union.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this portion of America's Workforce is sponsored by iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So here's what you do. Go to iMed.com. That's iMed.com/union, and you'll learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go back to Iowa and rejoin Al Wommel. Al is the political coordinator for the Iowa AFL-CIO, iowaafl-cio.org. He's got his hands full now because they want to roll back child labor protections in the state of Iowa. And they're doing this in a number of states. Al, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but this is a very, very coordinated and well-funded drive that's going on. It was reported recently, the Washington Post picked up on this, that the Foundation for Government Accountability, which is a think tank, right-wing think tank in Florida, has been the driving force. And right now, about 10 legislatures are moving in that direction. Arkansas, one of the latest, and they're going, you know, 14, 15 years old. And you in your state, in Iowa, it's 16. So it's well-coordinated. And we were just talking off the air about what's been going on for the past couple of decades. There's a lot of Republicans primarily that do not like the federal government. There's a lot of people that don't like the federal government, especially when it comes to IRS time. I understand that.
Right.
But still, we have a federal government. We have state governments. We have 50 state governments. And apparently, this is a coordinated attack to go back to the states, let the states do everything. And you were pointing out beyond child labor, why don't you bring up education? Can you explain, because you know what's going on with the Brown versus Board of Education, which goes back, what was that, 1954 when that ruling came out?
1954, that's right, yeah. The anniversary for that is coming up on May 17th, and I'm actually preparing a presentation for that. But, you know, what we saw during Brown versus Board of Education is that the Supreme Court decision in 1954, you know, desegregated America's schools. And then what happened was a lot of conservative-controlled, you know, state legislatures and local governments decided, well, we're not going to do that. We don't want to comply with desegregating our schools. So what we're going to do is make sure that we manipulate state and local law in such a manner that we can continue to desegregate our schools. And we're seeing the same thing being done with unions and workers' protections right now and over the past 10 years. What they've decided to do is instead of continuing to argue this at the federal level, they're like, you know what? We've been able to manipulate a lot of these elections and a lot of these state governments, especially when we see the changes in, you know, voting laws that have become very restrictive for people within the working class. And so now what we're going to do is manipulate things at the state level so that we are creating these unfair situations for people in labor. It's the same sort of manipulation that we saw back in the 1950s with Brown versus Board of Education decision. You know, it's how do we make sure we manipulate state law to take advantage of what we want to do, and thereby avoid complying with federal law. And, you know, it's really disturbing because, you know, back we were talking about, you know, education and segregation. And now we're talking about things like, you know, worker safety, child labor laws, and the ability and limiting the ability of people to organize so that they can have better workplaces. You know, most people who organize, you know, it's not about, oh, I want more money. People organize because they want better working conditions at their right. job. And they want to be paid their fair share, too. You know, when we see corporations and CEOs making, you know, millions upon millions of dollars and you're still getting paid pennies on that dollar, you're like, hey, you know what? My labor helped produce that tremendous profit you're seeing. You know, I should be paid my fair share of that. We're not asking mm-hmm. that everybody be a millionaire, but that's what we're looking for. And, you know, I find it disheartening that, you know, we see state governments, you know, doing this kind of thing to reduce the power of labor, because really that's what makes, you know, a more equitable America. That's what actually allows America to work.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got all the factories at John Deere, if you got all the employees at John Deere being paid a good wage, hey, guess what? Then they go out in the community and they spend that money in their own community, and that makes their own community more vibrant and successful. Why wouldn't
That's
you
right.
want that?
I know. It makes sense. It makes all the sense in the world. By the way, Iowa's union density is 7%. You're actually below Alabama. Alabama is 7.2%. And there's a lot of organizing going on in Alabama. And, you know, to that point, we're getting a lot of downloads. This show, you heard how many platforms we're on, but we're uh-huh. getting a lot of downloads into those southern right-to-work states. So obviously the people want to hear the union message. It makes a lot of sense.
Right.
So you mentioned voting and uh-huh. even a right-to-work state. Is anybody trying to – it's going to be tough to turn that around, but is anybody saying yeah. that we got to repeal right-to-work? I mean, look what they did in Michigan. I mean, it happened yeah. there. Anything happening in Iowa on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, we are trying to coordinate our statewide efforts on how do we attack right to vote. But the first thing we have to do is make sure that we get out and – or, excuse me, right to – we have to attack right to work. But the way we have to make sure that we do that is by getting the vote out. Now, Iowa, like a lot of other states in the nation, have recently manipulated their voting laws to make it more difficult for people to vote, make it more difficult for people to register to vote. And, you know, I was recently at a conference in Washington, D.C. for the AFL-CIO Martin Luther King Day, and they said that out of all the states in the nation, the new changes to voting laws, that Iowa's was the worst. And I was like, oh, well, thanks. Great. Appreciate that. So, you know, our one of the things we want to do is make sure that, you know, actually, as far as our union personnel are considered in the state of Iowa, we're registered at a very high rate to vote. But what we want to do moving forward is collaborate with other nonpartisan organizations to go out there and make sure that we're informing people of the voting process they have to go to, that we're continuing to register people to vote, and encouraging people to vote on the issues that are most important to them. And once we can start to, you know, climb that mountain and get to the top on that, you know, then we can start pushing, you know, for a legislature that is more aligned with, you know, union values, and then be able to get rid of right to work. But the first thing is we have to get, you know, union-friendly legislators and state senators into that Capitol. And we do that by making sure we get more voters out there who's like, who we've seen through polls, these things that the Iowa legislature is doing this year is not what Iowans want.
Right.
And so we have to then convince those people, you know, it is time to vote.
It's not what they want. And this is by design, too, because at that point, that's when somebody gives up and said, hey, screw this. I'm not even going to vote anymore. It doesn't make any difference. And that's what's happened in so many cities and states around the country. Hey, we just got about 2 minutes left of the show. On the legislation on the child labor, we have to point out that this is a very key day today. Where are we right now? If you can just refresh us real quick on that.
So the Iowa Senate passed their version of this horrible bill, and now the Iowa House is going to be debating this bill today, and it is going to be one of those knockdown, drag-out fights. We're encouraging people who have strong feelings about this to make sure that they get down to the state capitol and support our legislators who are opposing this bill. I know there's a lot of amendments that are going to be offered up by those who are in opposition to these child labor laws. You know, we're still down there fighting the best that we can, and we just hope that, you know, we can take some of the worst language out of this and make this something better. Because considering where this bill actually started, since our collaborated efforts with others, a lot of the worst, most egregious stuff has been taken out. So we've turned something that was a nightmare into, you know, something that's still a bad dream, but it's not quite as bad as it was before. So hopefully we can keep up that fight and keep reducing that harm, you know, that's taking place to my fellow Iowans.
From a nightmare to a bad dream. You said it all. You said it all, brother. Oh, my gosh. I want to do a shout out here to Senator Nate Bolton. And I saw a quote from him. He said, let's make it about taking care of kids who are injured working in these jobs, because it's going to happen. And you mentioned roofing. Yeah. I mean, that's a dangerous profession there. They're going to put kids in dangerous work environments and serving alcohol. Go figure.
Yeah.
My gosh. Jeez.
You know, being a former bouncer, it's dangerous enough for adults to be in places where people are serving alcohol, let alone a 16-year-old. Criminy.
Exactly. Al Womble, State Political Director for the Iowa Labor Federation, Iowa AFL-CIO.org. You hang in there, brother. Keep in touch with us. Let's talk down the road, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. Al is also a member of LIUNA Local 177. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Jimmy Williams Jr. on International Painters Appreciation Day. Jimmy, of course, General President of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And remember this, if you like a show, please share that show. Our sponsors like to know how many downloads that we're getting on America's Workforce. And I'll tell you, we are growing. I'm happy to say we're in the top 15% of all podcasts in America. And that's quite an accomplishment in the last 3 years of podcasting. AWFpodcast.com for all the shows. Let's go to line number two right now and welcome one of our longtime supporters, and that would be Jimmy Williams, Jr., General President of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT.org. Jimmy took over the presidency about a year and a half ago. Jimmy, welcome back to America's Workforce. He's here to talk about taking over the IUPAT. And yesterday, April 30th, was International Painters Appreciation Day. So we appreciate all the painters, especially the union painters. Jimmy, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, my brother?
Thanks, Flash. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So talk to me. You took over the presidency now. You're heading toward 2 years. How do you feel about it? How's it going for you so far?
Well, I mean, it's going great, and I appreciate you mentioning International Painters Appreciation Day, because in the world I live in, every day is International Painters Appreciation Day. But we're doing the Painters Union. A lot of great things happening. We're just swamped with the amount of work that has been created by the federal government, President Biden, his administration. It's a bad time right now to be a construction worker, that's for sure.
Well, Jimmy, you know, before you took over the presidency, you were the organizer for the painters. And I know there's been a lot of organizing going on, especially under the Biden administration here, and a worker-friendly NLRB. How are we faring with the painters right now with that kind of climate?
I tell you what, right now is probably the best time to be an organizer that we've seen, or at least I've seen in my lifetime. So we're spending a ton of our efforts making sure that we're getting our apprenticeship programs ready for the amount of work that's coming out, and doing a ton of recruitment for new members that can join our union and have access to these jobs over the next couple of years. It's just a really, really good time to be an organizer.
Is it across the board? I mean, you represent painters, drywall finishers, wall covers, glazers, glass workers, floor covering, sign makers, display. I mean, convention business is finally back because of course it was shut down during the pandemic. And so is it pretty much across the board right now?
It absolutely is. And like you said, I mean, with the pandemic, yeah, things were a little scary there for a minute. But right now, it's like we are back full blast. And it's every single trade.
What about the apprenticeship programs? You kind of touched on that. What are you doing? Because I'm hearing we need a lot of workers. Let's put it that way. And I know a lot of unions are reaching out, especially to high schools and underserved communities. We often say it's a pathway to the middle class. Can you reference that on behalf of what you're doing with the painters?
Yeah, I think that second point is where most of our efforts are. It's in the underserved communities. It's people of color. It's people that in the past maybe didn't have access to construction careers. And we have hundreds of pre-apprenticeship programs out there to help people get the knowledge of what the trades are before they even jump into a four-year apprenticeship program, help them with things like their GED, help them with things like, you know, making sure that they have driver's licenses and access to these jobs. There's a ton of work being put into that right now to help really expand the middle class.
Jimmy, you're familiar, especially with females entering the trades and the issues that come up, like child care, maternity leave. And I know the unions, a number of them, are working to make sure that they can take care of those issues because they, of course, want to grow their membership. How are we doing with the painters in that regard? Are you addressing the issues there so you can keep what you have and grow more females in the trade?
Right now, females are making up more and more of our apprenticeship recruitment efforts. And so we launched a national maternity policy about a year and a half, 2 years ago, where when our membership, you know, when a female member becomes pregnant and can no longer work, you know, the rules all around the country are different. We have created a fund where our female membership can tap into the maternity program and still get their pay for the time that they're unable to work, which helps us with recruitment, but it also helps us retain the membership.
So obviously it's moving in the right direction. I like that. So you're at, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm looking at your website here, iupat.org, 160,000 active and retired men and women. We talked a little bit about organizing. Where would you like that number? I'd like to double it, but let's be realistic here. Where do you see that going, especially with the climate we have in America today?
Yeah, I mean, we would all love to say we would love to double our numbers, but being realistic, there is no reason why we couldn't grow our membership at least 10% over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years with that much work. So internally, we set a goal to at least try to grow, you know, a couple thousand members a year over the next couple of years and, you know, see ourselves go up. Now, honestly, if we put the effort into organizing, if we were ever able to succeed in getting the PRO Act passed, we'd be able to double our membership easily.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, you bring up a topic there that you and I have addressed over the years, and that's something that just hasn't gotten the punch that it should be getting. And we have some of the right people in Washington. We don't have enough of them in the elected parts. I'm talking about especially in the House and the Senate. I'm just wondering, what's the game plan here as far as trying to get better labor law reform? You know, the PRO Act is a great idea. I don't know if they have to whittle it down some in order to get it passed. But, Jimmy, you've been on this issue for a long time. What do you think is the best approach here?
You don't take it off the table. I mean, when you look at what real change looks like, you got to keep fighting for it. And, you know, this last year when we lost the House, it wasn't as bad as many people thought it was going to be. And, you know, it's the opinion of most labor leaders that the PRO Act needs to remain our number one issue that we organize our politics around. So you just don't take it off the table. And once you can build enough political power to get it passed, you get it passed. I mean, look at what happened in the Supreme Court just this past year, where they overturned Roe versus Wade. That was over 40 years of political organizing that the conservative movement did. Our labor movement has to be ready for a 40-year fight to pass the PRO Act. And once those stars align, that's when we have to move.
Good point. Yeah, it takes a long time to get real change, and I'm glad you referenced that. Well, I'm going to let you go. I know you're busy. There's a lot of things going on with you, but I just wanted to give you a shout out here, especially District Council 6. You know, Northeastern Ohio here, because it was one individual, William Jaworski, elected officer of Local Union 707, who said, you know what, we need International Painters Appreciation Day. I know it's every day with the IUPAT, but there is International Painters Appreciation Day celebrated on April 30th, which was yesterday. So you take care. Keep doing what you're doing, and appreciate you joining here, America's Workforce. Okay, brother?
Thanks, Flash.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Tim Berga and the Ohio AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.